Hey, this is your host Brian Wayne here, and I'm here to let you know, in case you did not know already, that the Cheers to Comics podcast has since evolved. And if you're looking for a new shiny place to get your comic books from, then you need to head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com. It's like cheerstocomics.com, only with a shop in front of it. Shopcheerstocomics.com, and if you use code PODCAST at checkout, you're going to save yourself 10%. And I'm constantly adding new inventory, hot spec books, everything, any type of book under the sun. As it comes under my radar and it gets added into the inventory, I make it available to you. So remember, head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com and use code PODCAST at checkout and save yourself 10%. A pre-roll time. The Cheers to Comics podcast is proudly sponsored by Inked Marketing Solutions and the Inked Marketing crowdfunded comic for this yaw episode. Well, it's gonna belong to The Last Night of Twilight. Coming soon from the producer of Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Batman Beyond, Static Shock, and the new Batman Superman Adventures. Yes, the man is a legend in animation. Pinky and the Brain, sold right there. The Last Night of Twilight. What happens when you're broke, but your endless war against crime isn't over? The Last Night of Twilight is a story about an everyday superhero. He has no powers, he has no thirst for justice, but now his body is starting to portray him, but he just can't stop. Even a personal injury suit and losing all of his cool stuff won't stop him. His sidekick turning bad? That ain't gonna stop him. His former adversaries returning. Or retiring. Not returning. Retiring. That ain't gonna stop him. But age? Age is a son of a bitch. Age is gonna... might stop him. It might. I don't know. We have a comic book here, people. Like I said, the team behind this... I can't wait to see... Oh, I'm looking at this cover here, man. You got this pretty dark hooded looking figure. And you got like a walker. Like an old man walker. Not a Walker Texas Ranger. Like a tennis ball on the feet type of walker. I love it, man. I love it so much. I'm into it. So head on over to www.twinight.com. That's TWIKNIGHT.com. And get in on this, man. I got a good feeling. And like I said, Pinky in the Brain. Come on. Come on.
Age of Radio.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wayne, and this is episode 360. The 360th episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be a Creator Corner. Yes, another Creator Corner. Because that's how I'm doing it for you this week. Just bonus and bonus and bonus. Well, the creator that I cornered on this here episode, he a legend. Yeah, this is a big deal. This is what it is for me, at least. David Baron. The man has been coloring our funny books for over a quarter of a century. Well over a quarter of a century. And he a young man, too. The man, he's an absolute monster in the industry. He is since taking on the act of writing. And now he's got a Kickstarter that you need to check out. And it is not in the vein of his normal books. It's more of an all-ages read. So if you're a parent, this is a must back book, and that is Cobblestone Chronicles: Michael versus the Babysitters. And we're gonna get all up into this book. We're gonna talk an amazing origin story that David Baron has. It's the dude is an inspiration to So many, and even more so me now. So, yeah, I can't wait for you to check this out. But before you do, before we dive up all up into it, I have to shout out, and not by any type of obligation, because I want to. I want to shout out the newest affiliate of the Cheers to Comics podcast, Nerds Forever. And yes, I have my own comic book store now. I'm a retailer myself, but here's the deal. Nerds Forever is so good, I still kept them on as a sponsor, baby. It's just that kind of customer service. I'm going to keep learning how to have that type of customer service with my people. You know, it's a staple, and that's really what it came down to. So head on over to 307nerdsforever.com, 307nerds, the number 4ever.com, and when you're checking out all your amazing goodies that you're paying way less for than eBay prices, oh yeah, it's like that, people. Use code CHEERS at checkout and save an additional 10%. So, 307nerdsforever.com, cheers at checkout, and save that money. Gotta love some Nerds Forever, baby. Alright, now, with no further ado, I bring to you possibly, or definitely, one of my favorite conversations of the entire year. Possibly an all-time favorite, though. David Barron. Alright, David, how's it going, man?
Good, how are you?
I'm excellent. I was just kind of talking to you in the green room a little bit. My good friend of the show, Rylan Grant, hooked us up. And the fact that, you know, I mean, this is a podcast for those people listening on Spotify and iTunes that can't see. But if they were to look at the wall behind me right now, it is loaded with your work. So I've been a fan for as long as I've been in comics. And it's awesome to have you on board, man. So welcome.
Thanks for having me.
For sure. For sure. I know you, you've got cool stuff in the works right now that we're going to talk about. We got Cobblestone Chronicles, and I want to make sure I get the entire name right here. Michael versus the Babysitters, is that right?
That's right. That's the new book.
Awesome, man. So that's on Kickstarter now as we speak. And you have, I mean, you're funded. You're good to go. At this point on, it's just on to stretch goals and stuff, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all gravy at this point. I mean, we're Elise and I, this is our first Kickstarter that we've ever done. And so we had no idea what to expect. You mentioned Ryland. He was a huge help to figure out, you know, the whole system of what to do. And he looked at it way before I launched just to make sure I was on the right page. Because I didn't know what to expect. It's, you know, my first, you know, adventure, and I dove into the deep end of Kickstarter. And luckily, you know, we had a lot of success with it, and the goal of getting it out there for people to see, the goal of, you know, having it funded to make sure that it does get printed in a, you know, a big and major way. So, you know, I can give it to the rest of the world. And then at the same time, you know, make sure all the, you know, initial backers get something special. So
that's awesome, man. And this is your first Kickstarter, so it's got to feel real good to be able to fund in this massive sea of Kickstarter comics right now, because there's a billion different places for people's attention to potentially go to. So to be able to land enough eyes to reach your goal and make sure that your book is successfully funded, that's quite the accomplishment now, man. So it's, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
I just backed it about an hour ago. I was looking at it and I was like, oh, this price point is 74 pages, 72 pages.
72 pages cover to cover. Yeah.
That's amazing. Full color as a color artist, I would imagine, would only have
it's
it.
It's always in color.
No, I mean, this is something that I cannot wait to give to my little 7-year-old. She has been just kicking ass in life right now. And this is one of those things. I mean, it's not going to be an immediate, you know, gift, but it's something that's well-deserved that I cannot wait to share with her. I she's going to be all in this, man. Before we get into your origin story and all that, let's stay on topic here. Let's talk about this book. The Cobblestone Chronicles. I mean, this is really your first, to my knowledge, I mean, your first really dive into, you know, a young readers as far as, you know, that market goes. So what brought you to that point?
For the most part, it is my first, you know, personal adventure into young readers or all ages. I like to call it all ages because in reality, the people that read this book are much older. And I mean, I have my son who's a 12-year-old, his friends and some of my younger nieces and nephews and neighbors, you know, they've read it and they've loved it when I was, you know, trying to get some feedback on it. And then I sent it to principals and teachers and librarians and other professionals and other writers, other artists. And the way the adults, you know, reacted to it is what made me really feel like I had something special, because you can entertain a child on a certain level. I wouldn't say easily, but you can entertain them in a certain way that will never hit on any other level than a young reader, where I think this book really hits on several different levels without ever being inappropriate for a young reader. And so that's what I'm really proud of, you know, of this. I've had lots of experience with kids. Ever since I was in middle school, I used to volunteer at a camp during spring break. So while other kids, you know, took, you know, a week to 2 weeks, you know, vacation, doing whatever they wanted, I was in a camp mentoring other younger kids. And I did that all through my high school years. I was part of a lot of after school programs for kids. And so I had a lot of experience with them. And I've always enjoyed mentoring. I'm actually a high school soccer coach.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So, and I'm not the only one, you know, the funny enough, Alex Sinclair, who's I'm sure his works behind you as well. He also is a high school soccer coach. And he actually coaches at my alma mater. He's coaching at my high school where I graduated at. So
what are the odds?
Well, I mean, we're from the same area. You know, him and I, you know, worked at Wildstorm together. We've known each other for years. You know, when we go my origin story a little bit, like we'll talk about him a bit more because he's a big part of my career.
Awesome.
But going back to the whole kid part, you know, I've always loved kids. I've always loved babies. I've always loved, you know, children and the innocence and imagination that they have. So when we were on lockdown, with the pandemic, you know, I spent a lot of time, with my son, and I already spent a ton of time with my son, but now we spent like every single second together. And one time during dinner, my wife asked, you know, him, whose name is Michael, what do you miss most, you know, that the pandemic has not let you have, you know, in a while. And he actually said babysitters. He's like, I miss my babysitters. And we're like, you miss your babysitters? He's like, yeah, when you guys go on date nights, you know, they'd come over and they would be able to watch movies, play board games, do laser fights, build Legos, laser tag, sword fights, you know, like all these different things. And, you know, board games that me and my wife are like, okay, we're done with this board game, you know, for a while. And he wants to play it. So he'll, you know, he'll make the babysitter do it over and over. And we used to joke that it's not so much that it's Michael playing with the babysitter, being watching the babysitter, it's Michael versus the babysitter. And and then an idea kind of came to my head, and I instantly started thinking of it. And I started talking to my family, like, I can see that being a good comic. Like, I could see that being something special. And I just right then and there at the dinner table started kind of putting together this idea, and it actually filled out where it was a full formed idea of start, middle and end, beginning, middle and end. And I've always wanted to work with Elisa Wicke, the artist of the Cobblestone Chronicles. And I thought this project was finally her style, something perfect for her. And so I called her up instantly. I literally left the dinner table. And I called her up. I said, hey, I got an idea. I want to know if this sounds anything, you know, remotely interesting to you. And when I pitched it to her, she loved it and she started adding to it already. So I knew she was excited about it. I said, all right, give me a little while and I'm going to write it out. I'm going to get some layout together and we'll talk about it. I probably wrote the book, the initial first draft, in about 3 days.
Wow.
And it wasn't necessarily dialogued in 3 days, but it was you know, written out with, you know, page breakdowns of what's happening. And it flew, you know, just flowed out of me so easily because it pulls from my child's experience, my childhood experience, other people, you know, that I've talked to's, you know, childhood experiences. And so it's so natural. And that's part of the reason why I think adults will also enjoy this book is because it gives them some nostalgia and it gives them some, you know, fond memories of their own childhood. And so when that happens, that's why we have so much more. And then Elisa and I, we really fill out this story where we put extra details that children most likely will miss. And they'll miss it just because they are young readers. They won't know that these things are hidden in plain sight, where adults might pick up on it almost instantly, or at least have the ability to recall a page that they read 20 pages ago for the moment, you know, that they're reading now. They're like, oh, I remember, wasn't it? And then they'll go back and like, yep, there it is.
Awesome.
And the book is always filled. My last creator-owned Stained was the same way. And on the opening, you know, three pages, we told people really what the book was about without telling people what the book was about. You just had to really look into the artwork. And just because this is a young reader's book or all ages book, it's no different. It's the way I like to tell comic stories or stories in general. I like to be, you know, no matter what age group they're going for, I like to have them full and intricate and relatable and understandable. And Cobblestone is no different.
Yeah, no, I love all of that. The fact that you bring up the nostalgia point as far as attracting the more, you know, I guess the parent readers, you know, the ones that, you know, I guess you don't have to be a parent, but I feel like if you are a parent, that this is a home run because, you know, it's something you got to share together. And this is what I'm looking forward to. I mean, I know you were mentioning the age range kind of being around 10 to 12. My 7-year-old is, I don't mean to toot any horns or anything, but she's an incredibly advanced reader. And her homework every day is actually, you know, to read 20 minutes of books. And I've got an abundance of comics that are just right up her alley. And this is going to be one of those things that, she's going to be very much into, and I'm going to be able to enjoy it with her now. You know, it's not going to be something I could just hand off, you know, like, The Legend of Korra or something like that, you know, like, yeah, it's perfect for you, you know, you read it, but I'm not into it. This is something that, I mean, like I said, you get attracted to a certain creator and you just start having faith in their work, and me being a longtime fan of yourself, you know, like I said, you're a color artist, but I could say, I've also read your stuff, man. Like, look at it.
That's a good one too. That's a rare, probably the rarest cover.
Yes, indeed. So, for those the people that can't see what just happened, he's also written a pretty badass book, I might say, called Stained. I guess we're gonna let's work this origin story in reverse. So I've never done it like this.
All right.
we're definitely. I want to come back to Cobblestone for sure. We're not done with Cobblestone, but since you brought up Stained, or at least I kind of brought up Stained a little bit. This isn't your first venture into writing with Cobblestone. You have done something that's not all ages, or essentially, and with Stained, that was it, like 2017?
Yeah.
Was that your first published writing as a comic book artist, or how
as a credited writer? Yes.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's gotta feel cool.
Back around 2000, I would say 11, 12, I was an art director for Cryptozoic Entertainment. I did the World of Warcraft TCG, the Big Bang Theory party game, the Walking Dead board game, the DC deck building game, and a bunch of others. But my main job was to art direct the World of Warcraft TCG. And okay. And during that time, part of the reason I took that job is because I wanted to do a lot more writing. And one of the promises that didn't necessarily come to fruition, and not so much faults of theirs, it's just the way the business is that they were going to publish some of my creator owns. And it never happened. And I left the company, and that's when I started with Valiant. And then when I started with Valiant, that's also when I got stained off the ground. And the way I work my creator owns is I like them to be full scripts before I even find an artist. I like to know what I'm doing. So that way I can say, this is exactly what I'm looking for. This is exactly what the story is going to be. There's no surprises. You have all the scripts. Here's the schedule. And here's the release date of the books. And I need all my books done before, you know, this deadline. And then I go to publishers at that point. Maybe it's a lot of work, you know, on my end ahead of time. It's just the way I like comics to work. I hate late books. You know, if it's 1 week late, 2 weeks late, I can deal. If it's a month or 2 months late, I lose the story. And so I like to keep it all together. So Stain is a sci-fi action adventure thriller is the way I describe it. It's a 5-issue miniseries. Stain Volume 2 was just announced a couple months ago.
Oh, shit.
And that's coming out. Yeah, that's going to come out in 2022 with artist Carl Mostert.
Carl's my dude, man. Yeah, he's been on the show. Yeah, Deceased and Man Who Fucked Up Time. Yeah. It's my dude.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And he was with John Layman. And the funny part was that's John Layman right there. He used to be an editor of mine back at Wildstorm.
I love that.
And I've had that at my desk.
He's my all-time favorite writer.
Yeah, I mean, that's been at my desk for over 20 years.
Oh, that's so cool, man.
Yeah, so it's been one of those things. And I got that frame with Alex Sinclair, with John Layman, with a couple other people when I got that frame. So it has a lot of, you know, memories without, standing out as something that would be valuable to someone. So Stained Volume 2 is coming out with Carl. He, him and I met doing some Batman together. And what he has brought to Stained has been phenomenal. The first issue's already done and lettered. We're on to the second one. And we're just going to keep plugging away. And hopefully by October of 2022, he'll be way in advance done where I can solicit and, whether it's going to be another Kickstarter or if it's going to go straight to a publisher, that's yet to be seen. But the first things first is to get all done. But Stain Volume 2 is fully written. It's darker than ever. And it's the complete opposite of what Cobblestone Chronicles is.
Yes.
In terms of subject matter. But still, I write. The way I write comics also is the way I got into comics is I want them complex. I want them beautiful. I want them, satisfying with a beginning, middle, and end, and strong from page one to page when it ends.
I don't mean to interrupt, but real quick, what are those comics that you would classify as that you try to model your writing style after? Like what are those types of reads?
Going back from the day, what got me into comics, is basically, Chris Claremont's runs of the X-Men where you got a full run of character stories. And that's what got me into it, but he also wrote them in a way that, you could be a sixth grader and be allowed to read it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be, so many things nowadays deal with such heavy subject matter and they don't pull any punches because they're trying to be edgy or real, but you're alienating so many young readers. So like example, like the DC Titans TV show, that's not for my age group. To me, that's for, younger audiences and like teenage audience, yet it's filled with so much vulgarity that's not necessarily needed that my sixth grader and seventh grader couldn't watch it. As a parent, yes. I could be like, yeah, go watch that show. It's one of those things, but the subject matters that they're saying and the actual like emotional, range is really for a middle school, high schooler. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things. So that's like the biggest thing about my books is that I want them to be on such a level that you and I as more mature readers get a lot out of it. Yet I don't want it to be vulgar or so graphic that you can't let a younger reader get exposed to quality comics. And I think Stained showed that a lot because in Stained, You saw there was, it's about human trafficking. We killed about 30 kids, but you didn't see any of those kids die. You know, they were in crates, type of thing. So it was implied, and it was horrific death. You know, wasn't, you know, if you actually are mature enough to see what's going on in the book, you are, you know, horrified by what these bad guys are doing. Then you have, you know, and I say this lightly, you know, for anyone, you know, his, or not lightly, I say it very heavily, but there's a rape scene in the book. But again, because of experiences that I know of people and just the maturity levels of people, the rape scene is completely two black panels, where you don't see anything. And it's definitely story-based. There's a reason why, you know, that scene is in there. And so, but again, for a younger audience, you are not going to have to deal with that whatsoever. You're not going to have to be exposed. It definitely doesn't glorify. It definitely doesn't, you know, sensationalize. Yet as a mature reader, you get to read so much more into those two black panels, than anybody would ever draw anyways. And yes. So, and those are the things that I'm talking about. And I think like, you know, Warren Ellis and Planetary and Stormwatch Authority, I thought he did really well with that. DV8, the old Wildstorm book.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I thought they did really well about that. Like I said, tons of X-Men books I thought have done such a great job of giving you so much. And then of course, you know, I've had the pleasure of reading, you know, dozens and dozens of Alan Moore scripts, you know, through my years working with him, you know, at America's Best Comics, you know, through Wildstorm, and seeing what type of scripts, you know, he has. So it's not just the books. Like, I've definitely read, at this point in my career, I've probably read more scripts than I've actually read comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, because, you know, that's really how I read the comic books. I read them in script form. And then I look at the art when the books come in, but I don't normally read the book because I've already read the book, so I know what's kind of going on.
Right.
And otherwise, it also takes so much time, you know, to you know, invest. Where you know, it's like Swamp Thing, Green Hell that I'm working right now with Doug Monkey and Jeff Lemire. I probably will never read the book. I'll look through it just to see how it prints, the whole professional side, but I've read the whole script, you know, that Jeff wrote, and it's brilliant. And you know, and that's how I, you know, interpret most of my books. So sometimes when I read a comic, I always feel left out because I don't, you know, when I buy a comic from the shelf and I read it, I love it, but I feel not cheated, but it's like, okay, now, you know, call up the person, hey, send me your script. I want to see what else you wrote, you know?
Yeah, I like that, man. It's a bittersweet kind of curse situation, I would imagine, as a colorist. And honestly, I that's probably just one of many. You know, I've spoken with a couple of colorists on this podcast now, and yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of things that you miss out on as a colorist, because, well, I don't know, just for so many stupid reasons. But do know that it is my favorite part of a book. It will be the thing that I say yay or nay on a book with. If I were to open it up off the shelf blindly, it is 100% based off of how the color grabs my eye. So very, very appreciated.
Yeah. I mean, in today's world, there's so many talented colorists out there and so many talented artists that color themselves, that when you know of an artist that you really love and they get paired with a colorist that you don't necessarily enjoy, it really puts you off of that artist for that issue. And it really stands out. And so it is a very interesting modern dynamic where, back in the 90s, when you had, in late 80s, when you had Jim Lee's work or Eric Larson's or Todd McFarlane's or any of the other greats, you didn't really ever look at the color, because it was all kind of the same. And nowadays, coloring is just as diverse as the artwork. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where when I first started coloring, you know, we created a style at Wildstorm and perfected, you know, comic book coloring at Wildstorm Effects in a way that really showcased everything. And no one ever said like, oh, they're just trying to be like Wildstorm Effects, or they're just trying to color like Alex Sinclair or Laura Dupuy. But if you were a Jim Lee clone or a Rob Liefeld clone or a Todd McFarlane clone, they're like, oh, you draw like that person. But it's funny that no one ever made the same jump to coloring. Mm-hmm. You know, they would do the same with writing. If you wrote like Frank Miller, they'd say, oh yeah, he's like a Frank Miller clone in terms of writing, or he's, you know, but no one ever made that jump to coloring because it was such a new thing. And because when we first started coloring, no one really knew our names. And so it wasn't really a thing that you could say, hey, that person, you know, colors like David Baron,
right,
or Alex Sinclair, because you just wouldn't know. You'd see Wildstorm Effects and that would be it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's I'm talking to a couple of colorers. The first one that comes to mind is Sean Callahan. He's a hell of an up and coming guy. But he was telling me, you know, like the first time he put a book out, he went to go pick it up off the shelf and it didn't have his name on it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, dude, that's terrible. And that's like one of those things that just irks me. If I look at a, you know, a cover, and if you're going to take the time to title the books, put those names on there. There's two more names at least you got to put on there. You know, you got a color artist, you got a letter. They're without them, you got a crap book. You know, yeah. I mean, it's so yeah, no, it's just it's another one of those things that you guys got to suffer as color artists. But it makes me wonder. Yeah. Are you a masochist? What made you want to be a color artist? I mean, well, where were you at as far as your artistic ability starting out? I mean, did you draw and then get into, or let's start though.
This is the full origin story then. So my first comic was G.I. Joe comics and other comics like that, that you get at grocery stores, okay. You know, during the spin racks or when comics were, you know, where all the candy is, you know, to get kids to buy them. My first real comic book, and I say real, as I should just say, my first comic book purchase in a comic book store, okay, was X-Force number one. My friend took me to the comic book store with him, and I was instantly hooked. I said, ooh, this is awesome. Polybagged, you know, it had that, I had, you know, collector in my blood. So it really made this something that I was like, okay, I want to collect all the cards of X-Force number one before I even read the book. You know, I was like, ooh, this is kind of cool. I only bought one at the time, opened it up, read it, loved it, and then went back and bought all the cards. You know, every single polybag. X-Men number one came out, same exact thing, loved it, bought all the covers. I bought that book over and over and over again. Adult, I'd be like, buy one of those, your favorite one, and buy more books that you enjoy. Cause I passed on like other like golden books at the time. And, but instead I bought, you know, like 20, you know, X-Men number ones and 20 X-Force number ones. And so I kept, you know, reading comics and started drawing with friends, just like every other kid does.
Right on.
And going through it and we'd be drawing and stuff like that. I'm in San Diego at this time. I grew up in San Diego, California, and all of a sudden we get this, you know, nice little flyer at the comic book store that says, hey, San Diego Comic-Con is coming to the convention center, you know, and it was the first year that San Diego Comic-Con was at the convention center. Now it's been around before, but never on such a grand stage.
Right.
And so my friend's dad said, if you guys want to go, you know, me and my best friend, Nick Jenkins, if you two want to go, you know, I'll take you. And I still remember, you know, every single trip that we'd go get breakfast burritos and we would be, have you ever been to San Diego Comic-Con?
I have not. No, I have not experienced that yet.
So they have this huge drive up, you know, to the front where you can drive up, and it's now only for buses because okay, San Diego Comic-Con's two pack. But literally when that show first started, your parents could drive up on the curb, kick you out of the van or whatever car you're into and drive off. You know, nice. It was really, really easy. And so he would drive us up. Or we'd park, you know, if he wanted to go in, you know, on one of the days, we'd have our breakfast burritos and we would just wait in line. And you bought your tickets at the show, you know, you couldn't pre-buy them.
Right. There's no lottery or anything like that.
No, nothing like that. You just walked up and registered at the show. And, so we did that. It was all part of the fun. And I saw, that you could do a portfolio, reviews. I thought, oh, how cool. And I used to sit there and I watched them. My eighth grade year, I think I showed my first portfolio with my friend.
No kidding.
Yeah, we said, hey, let's get together. Let's give it a shot. Let's see how good we are. You know, because everyone in school always thought like, oh, you guys are the best, you know, artists in the school and all these different things. Like all you guys do is draw and you guys are all amazing. And looking back at that art, it was all garbage, but, you know, it had something about it that people liked. So we went, showed portfolios, got ripped to shreds. No one held back because we were eighth graders. You know, no one held back at all.
They probably got a kick out of it because you're an eighth grader, because they know they're not going to get punched in the face.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they were actually, I mean, honestly, I think they were just trying to help. I really do. I think they were saying like, hey, kid, if you really want to get this job, this is what you need to work on.
Awesome.
You know, and I think it was more that than them being anything of you know, ill-willed or mean-spirited.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
And so I took that advice, came back my freshman year, and it was the eighth to freshman year, and then got ripped to shreds again. And I was like, okay, not too bad. Got ripped to shreds again. It was actually the end of my freshman year. So it was as I'm going into my sophomore year. And so I said, okay, not so bad. I kept showing. Well, I went to the Wildstorm booth and I ended up getting a business card. And I ended up saying, call this number, you know, and we'll chat. And again, I'm 15 years old. You know, I'm still being driven to the Comic-Con. You know, like it's
right.
still not, you know, something that I can do on my own.
She got a call.
So after the show, I wait the week that they said to wait. I called and I remember all the people that I spoke with because they've all became, you know, friends of mine through the years. I called them up and I said, hey, you know, my name is David Barron. I got this business card at San Diego Comic-Con to give you a call. I showed my portfolio and I wanted to, you know, schedule an interview. And they said, okay, who'd you talk with? I said, oh, I talked to this person and this person. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, And they said, hold on. And I said, okay. And so I was on hold for like what felt like 50 minutes, probably like a good five though. And when they came back, they said, how old are you? That was literally their first, you know, question. How old are you? And I said, well, I'm 15. They're like, okay, hold on. And I've got it on hold again. This was much earlier. They go, okay. So to be at Wildstorm, I'm not sure how you got this card, but you have it. But at Wildstorm, you got to be 18. You know, we don't hire people under 18 to work here. But we do have this other company that might be interested. And so John Need, the former publisher of Marvel Comics, the former vice president of DC Comics, the former president or vice president of Wildstorm, and he was the vice president of Cryptozoic Entertainment. He owned a side company with his sister, Clydene Nee, who a lot of people know through San Diego Comic-Con, called In Color, and it was a coloring house and a digital film service. Wow. And Wildstorm used them a lot. And so basically it was where they could hire people like me and see if they, you know, pan out, or college kids and see if they pan out, or just get cheap labor, you know? Like
well, there's that too, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like all of the above. And so I went in the interview and I got the job at 15. So I started working with, you know, a bunch of different comic book studios, and, you know, including Image, Extreme, Wildstorm, all the Image, you know, places. Did a lot of trading cards back when I was 15. Worked on books like Wetworks. Nice. I know that we did things like Casper. One of the coolest books I got to work on at that place was Star Wars Droids for Dark Horse. Yeah, that was really cool. And I got into the world, and we like I said, we filmed the books back then because it wasn't digital back then, and we mail them off. Go driving down to FedEx to mail off big boxes of film to Canada to the printer. And so what would happen is I interviewed as a penciler, as a full-on artist. I had sequentials and I had covers.
Nice.
And I got hired as a colorist because that was the only job at this company that was art-based. And I said, absolutely, because what 15-year-old is going to say no to anything comic book related. So I said, yes, absolutely. And I didn't even really know what I was getting into, you know, like really, I just thought, let's do this. This sounds great. And luckily I had a strong work ethic and I had a good head on my shoulders to figure out, how to understand all the processes of comics.
Working deadlines at 15. Like that's tough, man. I mean, that'll learn you real good. You know,
we had a friend, again, a longtime friend. He's one of the first people I met at Wildstorm, cause he would come to In Color, and he would bring pizzas and, he'd bring a bunch of pizzas. His name's Aaron Watanabe, really nice guy. And, he'd bring a bunch of pizzas and he'd bring one zip drive. And for people that don't know what a zip disc is, it's this little blue disc that holds a lot of information.
Well, like 3.2 megabytes of information.
Yeah. Which back then was a lot of information.
That was huge.
Yeah. And, or he would have several, you know, we'd have a whole stack of them. It would have a bunch of trading cards on them. And he would a lot of times like bring them in on a Friday because all the art came in, you know, throughout the week, bring it on a Friday and said, we need all this done by Monday. And so Friday to Sunday evening, I would just be at In Color working nonstop and loving every second of it. You know, nice. Doing Gen 13, doing a Spawn, doing a Wildcats, like I said, Wetworks, all these different, you know, awesome cards. But a lot of the old Image card sets that came out at, you know, in 94, 95, and 96, they were almost all done by me. Like a half of those sets were done by me.
As a teenager.
Yeah, as a teenager.
Like a barely teenager. You're not like almost graduating teenager.
Yeah, 15, 16, and 17 were In Color. And then when I turned 18, I moved to Wildstorm Effects and Wildstorm proper. And then that's when I really started to get to work with Alex Sinclair and Laura Dupuy and Ted Ehrlich and so many others. I mean, that place was full of talent. Joe Chido, Wendy Fouts were there, still doing hand colors. You know, Scott Williams' office is right there. Our office is right across the hallway from Jim Lee's office and John Nees and Travis Charé, you know, Jeff Campbell. I mean, all these people are all over, you know, in Wildstorm, including all the editors, Scott Doombeer, Ben Abernathy, John Lehman, you know. And so it was just a magical, magical moment. And DC bought Wildstorm and you know, then we kind of get more to, you know, my more current stuff of working with DC, but it's been, 20 going on 28 years now of comics.
That's amazing, man. Cause I was thinking, you know, I saw that, you know, almost 30 years and then you popped on my screen. I'm like, so you've been doing this for what? Like since you were 12? Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you look like you're my age and you're still like less than, like 8 years older than me or something like that. So it's, I can't imagine that life. Like just right out of high school, being right up into the mix of it at its best too. Like it was the dawn of modern comics, you know? And oh man, this is what an incredible story. I don't know of many people that have decided that, I mean, 15 years old getting discovered like that, you know, after a couple, even then you experience rejection at a young age. Like I said, I know if somebody told me, no, you're not going to do it at 15, I'm like, I'll figure something else out. Yeah. I mean, I'm a dumb 15 year old, but you were much smarter than that. And dude, Jesus Christ. I am so grateful for that story. That is amazing. Now since you've decided, okay, coloring's my thing and you're a surefire Hall of Famer. I mean, this is, as far as color artists go, I mean, you are a household name at this point. There's no doubt about it. But to know that you got recognized as an artist, have you ever thought, okay, you know, maybe I want to draw a book or you just started getting into writing again a few years ago, you know, technically. So is drawing the next phase possibly?
So I've done a good amount of covers.
Okay.
I do enjoy the art side. I enjoy the writing side a lot more because I can get more out. And part of the reason I think I enjoyed coloring so much and stuck with it. So even during all those coloring years, I've always drawn things and I've always written, stories. It's just how much did it actually get to the, you know, printed page of a full comic book series. And in comics, especially, which was really weird, especially in the 90s, they didn't really like writers to go to art and artists to go to writing. That's something that happened more in the 2000s. And, when writers, started saying, well, I draw too, so I want to draw my own book, or vice versa. It's more commonly vice versa, where artists was like, oh, I'm going to write my own book. And then they kind of realized what they like to do better, because I know a lot of artists that can write and because they enjoyed storytelling and they're very creative, which makes them such a great, artist. But ultimately, they'd rather be behind an art desk than a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really where people go, where I right now would rather be behind a keyboard than an art desk.
Awesome.
And so occasionally, I don't mind hopping behind my art desk, or even when it's digitally, behind the, virtual, art desk right here, this little wake up. I don't mind that stuff here and there, but putting that grind that it takes to be a Doug Monkey or a Jock or a Jim Lee, it's a lot of work and it takes a certain mindset. And my mindset right now in my current form is to, I think, a lot more keep telling stories, but in a little bit quicker way, where I could probably write 5 issues of comics by the time it takes one artist to do, a full, one issue. So I think that's kind of where I lie right now.
But that's awesome. And honestly, it's refreshing to hear too, as a fan and a reader, to know that, okay, you've already had this very long career at a length of which a lot of people would dream to have. But at so young, we would hate to see you burn out. And now we're discovering this whole other talent that you have. That's very exciting to not know that you are going to burn out, because you have this other thing, and to say that, you've got so much to get out, and that's, that's why you want, prefer writing, because you can express more through that. That is awesome to hear, man. And to see these two different sides, and here I go circling back around, going back to Stained, and then Cobblestone Chronicles. You're multi-talented. You're not a one-trick pony as far as, okay, well, he's a color artist, but he can write like this too. No, he's a color artist that also can write several different ways, and that's exciting, because if you could write these two ways, I can't wait to see what's in between. What other type of talented artist you bring along with you? Carl Mostert, are you fucking kidding me? Like, yeah, that's my great dude. Like, man, I was glad to wake up early to do that that interview with him all the way down in South Africa. Like, that was and then I look at Eliza, is it Wiki or Wiki?
Wiki.
I mean, drastically different style, but at the same time, I'm drawn to color, and this person, she knows the palette that attracts me, and it's, I don't know, man, it's awesome to see that you're willing to take on all these other artists and stuff that are, just have.
Yeah, I mean, so much. One of the great things about the Cobblestone Chronicles is that I color and I letter that book. So,
you do color this as well.
Oh yeah, I color.
Oh gee, so this is like a coloring style I've never seen of yours.
So that's one of the things that I love about me, is like one thing that I actually like pat myself on the back on, is that I actually don't really have a coloring style. I compliment artists, and I've always done that growing up, where I know that people like Alex Sinclair and Laura Dupuy, like, they can do the same thing, but in reality, they definitely have a distinct style. My work changes. So if you've seen my work on, let's say, Valiant's Dr. Mirage, that is different than my work on Doug Monkey's, JLA. Mm-hmm. And it's also different than the Cobblestone, and it's also different than Stained. So you'll get similarities because it is me. But you'll get something that's always going towards a project. It's kind of like if I was a fashion designer or a costume designer for a movie, and we're doing a Western, I'm not going to put them in my, Footloose outfits. Like, you're going to change it up. And that's how I've always seen me as a creator, is that I'm not someone who, I'm saying, what are we trying to do? And this part of the reason why I really like coloring a lot, because it's not so much what am I going to do to make this a David Barron project. What I'm going to do is give you expertise and knowledge to tell a better story. And so that's why I read the script. I find out what the story is that we're telling, and then I apply my craft to help tell that story. Where I think there's other people that they don't care what the story is. They're going to make it look the way they want to make it look.
And right.
That's not me. Yeah.
Well, and they say stuck in this bubble to where, you know, it's kind of, you become, I guess, like a character actor in a way, to where people are like, oh, he can only, I mean, he works well with Jock and Capullo, but I mean, he would never be able to do so and so. You're somebody to where you could be paired with anybody because you compliment the artist. You're not a color artist that says, okay, make sure you guys know it's me. But at the same time, the subtlety that you bring about it, you're a humble color artist. It's a Hall of Famer. Let's put it that way. Cause it's, there's not a lot of people out there that, you know, like I said, you don't have a style, and I'm looking at this Kickstarter page here for Cobblestone Chronicles. And based off of what I would have never imagined, this is you. So to see that you could take it to this level too, and do something like this. And
Cobblestone was actually one of my most fun times I had coloring a book ever. I mean, partly because I got to, the way the Cobblestone worked was, I obviously wrote the book, you know, fully. And then I gave it to Elisa, and she would turn in pages at like 5 at a time. And then what I would do is I would letter the pages first. Mm. And then that's how I made sure that if there anything that did get changed in the artwork compared to the script, that everything still works. Sometimes I'd come up with new dialogue. Sometimes I'd come up with something a little bit, you know, different to match the artwork better. Or in a very, very rare, you know, I think like twice this whole book, I would say, you know, I don't know if it works. Can we try this? And we'd change something a little bit. After I lettered it and it looked great, I would, and read well, I'd go right to color right away. And so we had a penciled, lettered, and colored page every single time before we moved on to the next page, which is super rare.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, you get all the script, then you get all the artwork, then the coloring and lettering happens by two different people. Mm-hmm. But being it, you know, my creator own with Elisa, we are able to really dive in and create the world, you know, each page at a time. And doing that brought so much joy to the next page, because you really got to spend time with the page. And like right now I'm working with Doug on Swamp Thing, and it's not that I'm not spending time on the page, but they're coming in and I'm just coloring it. And then I go into the next page, where mm-hmm. this, I got to letter it, read it, make sure it hit on all cylinders, you know, talk to Elisa and say, hey, can we change this? Like, here's it colored. What do you think? Do you think we should add this? And then we'd go back and add a couple things. And this is why I could say that Cobblestone is so much more than just a young reader's book, because there's so much more detail that fans of artwork will value, which is part of the reason I think that you were attracted to it so much, even being something that's completely different than the Batman Who Laughs Behind You.
It's
so different, but at the same time, it still hits on those cylinders. You know, it's kind of one of those things why South Park works. You know, it's the rawest animation in the world, but it fits the object of what they're trying to create. And therefore it becomes, South Park, in South Park's case, a masterpiece. In Cobblestone's case, I hope a future one, because that's obviously the goal that every creator should have. You shouldn't create a throwaway thing. You know,
no.
That's not what I do when it's my creator own. Everything
I like that.
Stained, yeah, whether it's stain, whether it's Cobblestone, whether it's a couple of my other, you know, projects coming down in 2022, I'm always trying to hit on award-winning mentality. You know, it's up to the critics and the fans to say if it was good or not, But my goal is always to hit on those cylinders. And that's how I approach comics, because as a reader and as a fan, that's what I'm hoping other people are also doing. They're striving. That's part of the reason why I really love Carl, because Carl's also trying to hit every cylinder every time. And I also love Elisa for that same thing. She's always trying to make you laugh with her artwork.
I love it. Oh, that's important. I like that you said that's very, very important to me. Because, I mean, honestly, that's a surefire way to keep a book on my pull list forever, is if you can get one giggle out of me per issue.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the next one. And I mean, I'm so excited to read this with my kid, man. You have no idea, David, seriously.
Good.
Do you have a projected shipping date on this?
December, early December.
No kidding. That's tomorrow almost. That's crazy.
So the book's fully ready, you know, for print. I'm waiting on a couple more covers for the exclusives. But those are supposed to be in this week. And then it's off to the printer. It's a US printer. So we control how long it actually, you know, will get shipped, and we already know those projected dates. So I hope to send it to the printer, literally the day that Kickstarter is done. If not actually a little bit beforehand, just so it's all prepped and stuff like that. Cause again, the book's completely done before we advertised it on Kickstarter. And then it'll take no more than 30 days from start to finish to get back to me. You know, and that's on the long side, because that's 4 to 5 weeks, when reality is about 3 weeks. So it gives us a 2-week buffer in there. And then
it's just packing hundreds of books.
Yeah. And me and my wife and son are experts at that, from the 20, you know, 8 years and the online cons. Yeah.
See, that's one thing. I'm glad you bring that up, because I got to say, that's one thing that I love my Kickstarter. And I've been getting an abundance of Kickstarters in the mail, but the way they've been packed recently, and I'm not going to call anybody out, but a lot of them just get sent in an envelope and shipped out. And that's no good, because I'm a collector. You're a collector. You understand that. You mentioned buying 20 copies of X-Force #1. Do you still have those, by the way?
No, I couldn't. So, a quick story about my comic book collecting days. It got killed by free books.
Ah.
So it's one of those, how you said, like the pitfalls of being in the industry sometimes. I got every single book in the industry for free.
Yeah.
And I kept my UPS and FedEx guy at my house, just kept big boxes on my doorstep. Or one time he had like 5 boxes stacked up.
Jeez.
I mean, he's like tall as a man. And he said, "Do you need help bringing them in?" I'm like, "No, I don't want them in my house." And he's like, "Oh, what do you want me?" It's like, I leave them. So my friends would come over and they would literally just pick a box. And I used to let them look through them. And then I made a rule that they couldn't even do that anymore. You just had to take a box.
Oh.
And I just got too many books, and like, it's the curse of a collector, where you'd be like, "Oh, only if I can get all these things for free." It kind of kills the fun of going to a store and searching for things and knowing that you were there at the rack when it came out, you know, like I was at the store when this book came out and I bought it, you know, type of thing. And so it is one of those things that, it makes me sad. Like, I see your darker image behind you. I see, you know, some of the Wolverines and the Venom, you know, #1, you know, all these things that I've had in my collection. You know, multiple, you know, ones of it. And, you know, from Image Zero to Gold Foil, you know.
Oh, they're all over there. Trust me.
Yeah.
If I turn the camera a little bit, you would see my curse. I actually just came home with 5 more long drawer boxes 2 days ago because of my curse. And I just signed up as a retailer. So now I'm going to have even more stuff coming in. I'm afraid to lose that little sparkle there. Cause I used to like, I have a pull list. I pre-order everything I buy. I like going and picking up my books, but now they're just going to be delivered to me. And I'm afraid I'm going to, I don't know. Dude. I'm a
like
junkie.
Just,
I'm not going to lose the blah. I mean, I'll find space. I'll just buy bigger.
I mean, it's one of those things to always keep in mind. It's kind of like what they say, you know, don't work with family, you know, or your wife or husband type of thing, because you'll see them all day and then you're not going home to them, missing them.
Right.
You are with them nonstop. And so it's good to work with them. It's just, you know, boundary. It's comics collecting for me was the same thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't read comics anymore on the same scale that I used to.
Right, right.
Unless it's in script form. I read scripts all the time from my friend's books. That says, hey, check out my new script. Boom, 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 done. Or I'll read it in PDFs as like, hey, check this out. You know, tell me what you think type of copy. But actually going to the store, grabbing a book, whenever I do that, cause I still get that itch, you know, those books usually, you know, will just sit there and then I end up giving them away, you know, just here, you know, here, read this book, you know? So yeah, I think the last book I bought was, the last issue of The Walking Dead might be the last comic book.
All right. 193 or what? Yeah. Okay.
I was just at New York Comic Con. I did buy a couple people's books. I bought the person tabling next to me. He actually had a children book. So I bought my son that. It was, what was the title of that? I hate that. I can't forget. I know it was like Trash It. Can It. Trash Can It, I think is what it was called.
All right.
It was a really cool little children's book. My son liked it a lot. So I was happy to buy that book, and I bought a couple other ones of, you know, going around Artist Alley, and just, you know, trying to support other people. You know, so those are really good, but yeah, no collecting. So that's what happened in my collection. I wish I still had those books.
Yeah. Yeah. The probably the most said line in comic book history is I wish I still had those. Yeah.
Money. Most of those books, I mean, I know that like all my Deadpool, you know, origins and things like that I had, I know those going pretty well. And all the Rob Liefeld X-Forces seem to be grading, you know, really high and the top of front. But in reality, I wish I had them, not because of the financial, you know, investment that I thought I was doing. In reality, that investment was all emotional. You know, like every book that I had reminded me of the time that I had with my, you know, X-Force number one will always be bought because of a friend of mine named Chris Lyons. You know, he will always be tied to that. And the fact that I know his name back from the sixth grade, and he was just a neighbor that we only spent like a year together, you know, but that emotional impact of my career. And then ultimately, you know, Nick Jenkins, who was my best friend growing up, who I still talk with, you know, all those books, you know, we all have stories. And every time we get together or talk on the phone, what I talk to him about is like, do you remember that comic book store? Do you remember this one? Remember how we used to do this? You know, because those are why I enjoy collecting comics, you know.
I love it, man. And just from talking to you here in this last hour, I could tell that you are a person that clearly enjoys this. I mean, you'd have to be insane to be doing this for, you know, 25 plus years and not like it. You know, but I mean, you're a fan of the medium, and sure, you don't get to read comics, but it's you get to read them in a much more raw form that a lot of us wish that we could read them.
I think if more people put out their scripts, like Stain Volume One, that whole script will be available. I want to kind of polish it up. It takes a little bit. You know, comic book writers are notoriously, their scripts are filled with errors because it's not the medium where you need to see it. Some more than others. Some, you know, scripts, and I won't call people out, but we've seen scripts that are, you know, almost illiterate, but are also beautifully done because they tell a great comic book story. But the actual descriptions and use of, you know, vocabulary is quite limited, but yet it gets the point across. And then you have people's scripts like, where I can call it like Alan Moore, who will write a 20 page script, but it'll be like 300 pages.
Right.
And that's why a lot of times, you know, when he works with artists, he's working with some of the most intelligent artists out there because of, you know, just what his script entails. Like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen would be a wonderful script for people to buy. I just don't know if they ever would actually sell it, especially now. That script, when I read it, was way over my head. And my good friend, who was editor at the time there, He just loved that script because he understood every single reference, and not only just understood it, but knew it. And he was just thought, man, what an amazing, amazing script. And so, I mean, that's another reason why I like comics. It really works on, you know, multiple different levels. But yeah, ultimately, you're right. I love the medium. I think it's one of the best mediums in entertainment for what you can do. I wish, you know, CBS and, you know, Paramount and Warner Brothers, I know they have DC, but I really wish they would invest more in developing comic books, not just developing TV shows.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I'm a two-second rant. DC fandom, two pieces of information about comic books themselves, and they were all flashes, like news flashes. There was no spotlight on anything at all. And I'm glad you bring that up, because it really, there needs to be more focus on DC comics. Because, I mean, if you were to look at my wall here, I mean, a lot of it's DC for the most part, because this is, they're putting out amazing stuff, man. It's and your name is tied to so much of it, Darren. David, I combined your names together, Darren.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm excited, Jesus. You know, before we started this, I have the CLZ app, and I was like, yeah, I know this guy's put out some stuff. I was looking at your what have you done on the internet, and it's just never ending. Every time I went to another page, I was like, oh, there's like 20 more things that the last thing didn't have. My point to this being, I went into the CLZ app, and that's how I found this in there, because I saw that you had written something else, and I thought, okay, Stained, where have I seen this before? I know there's been this book in my house. Where have I seen this? So I went into my inventory. Okay, it's not there. So I kind of diverted away. Went into the CLZ app, and I thought, I want to know how many books of David Barron's I actually have. I went in there, it's at 64, by the way. 64 books registered in the CLZ app that your name's tied to, at least that the CLZ app has correct. But I saw in there, I was like, they're Stained. So I went in there and I pulled it out, and in the app, it actually shows it as the blank cover. I'm like, I don't remember seeing this. And I got the nerd block here, and I just... Once again, just geeking out as a collector, how it all kind of circled back around, just seeing you have such this huge, huge index of what you've done. Now, I have to just, I know that you're pressed for time here, but one nerdy question, and I want to, this is going to set a standard for any aspiring colorist out there. You do a lot of stuff, man. What is your page rate per day? Like, what are you, because I mean, you have your name on everything. Like, how fast are you working now after been doing this for as long as you have?
That's a good question. So you can talk to my friend Alan Pasolacqua, who's also a colorist. And he says by far I'm the fastest colorist that he knows. That when I really want to go, I make my decisions quicker than anybody else and the way I go through. But with that said, I'm definitely slowing down as I get older.
Naturally.
It is one of those funny things that I was talking to Alan not too long ago, and I told him, I go, man, I'm not as fast as I used to be. Now, if I have to really, you know, get something done, you know, it can happen. I have done amazing work in 2 minutes, and I've done horrible work in 4 hours. In comics, it's all about the process, who you're working with, what is entailed. I once found someone who did a circle and black ink all around, and that was the opening page of the book. And he told me it took him all day. And I was like, why? And he goes, because he kept second guessing if there was a better way to do this page. Even though it's what the description was, he was, as he's working, he's wondering if he can do it a different way. And so that's kind of how comics work. You're looking to always be your best. And so I slowed down a lot. I would say on average, if I've worked with this artist before, on a full day, I could probably do 3 pages a day and be happy. If I was forced to do more, you know, like I said, it's where you're at. You know, you could always do less, you can always do more. Obviously what people fail to realize sometimes, especially artists that I talk to, it's always funny when they're like, oh, take your time. And I'm always like, if I take any more time, I will be broke and not have food on my table. Mm-hmm. You know, like there is such a thing of you have to, you know, get work done. And I would probably say that most colorists must complete 2 pages a day if they're going to have any type of decent living. But in reality, if you want to make a great living, you probably want to do 4 pages a day as a color artist. But with that said, you know, I fluctuate and I have diversified into other areas. So I don't just, you know, color anymore. So there's other things that I do in terms of design, terms like work with a soccer club doing design work. I coach soccer at a high school. I work with my wife on many other things with her business. She's a teacher, but she runs all the activities at a local high school, a different high school than I coach at, funny enough. And then, so there's all these different things because, again, I'm not a young colorist anymore or a young creator. It's one of those things that I've learned to kind of adjust as time goes. But when I was young, I once had to do a 48-page book. I got the pages on Friday and I had to deliver them on Monday.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah.
See, okay.
I won't tell you which one because I don't want people to like it. Oh, yeah, it shows. You know, because that's the whole secret. The whole secret is trying to let you know, that, you know, not let you know which ones we have to kind of rush through and which ones we don't. That's kind of the secret to make it, you know, you pull some punches here and there, but in reality still give you, you know, what we needed. And that was a long time ago, but yeah. So I've done, I think the record was like 24 pages in one day.
You're a monster. That's insane.
And it was a very mainstream big book too. Like it wasn't, and that was just part of the process back then. Like it was not, you know, Divine Right, the number one, the Jim Lee book. The first 8 pages I think took, you know, like 5 months to do just because of Jim's work. And then I think the last, and he obviously he knows better because my memory fades me on this project a little bit, but I think he did the last, 14 pages of Divine Right in like a day and a half. And he did them on smaller pages. So instead of the full 11x17, he did them smaller, like comic book size. And I remember people running up to his house because he was working at home, you know, grabbing the pages as they were done, bringing them back to Wildstorm down the hill. We'd scan them, we'd color them, we'd film it, you know, letter it all in house. And then at that 5 a.m., you know, it had to go to the printer to, you know, be shipped on time. So there's, you know, there's all these stories in so many different, you know, studios. So, but yeah, no, it definitely ranges. The biggest thing though, especially modern day comics, the mantra is make comics that you want to read.
Yes.
I mean, that is the mantra. So anything that I'm part of, or my part of it is always something that I want. Obviously if I'm working with DC, some of it's out of my control, but ultimately what I do on my end is, to a level that I would want another professional to do on their end if I was going to purchase or read it.
Wise words, man. David, I'm blown away by all. I love this last hour of my life, and I know I've kept you longer than I could. I'm gonna count on the fact that we get to do this again because I've got an entire notepad here that I haven't even got to pertaining to your amazing career, man. So I'm not gonna keep you any longer, but I'm gonna make sure the listeners know they need to check out the Cobblestone Chronicles. Even if you don't have kids or whatever, you know somebody with a kid. That this book needs to be ingested. I mean, it really is something special here. I mean, I've got my eye on a new artist now. I have a bunch of Rick and Morty, so I probably have some of her work.
She's a gallery artist. This is actually her first comic book ever.
Oh, really? Okay. Shit. Yeah. See, that's a whole nother thing that we could talk about. Oh, man.
Yeah. She did a pinup. You should have her on. She's great. She's a great guest, but she did a pinup in Chew for John Layman. Oh. And that was about it. That's the only thing that she's ever done. And then But she's a gallery artist who works, who's done work for Rick and Morty, who's done stuff for WWE, who's done stuff for, I can't even name all of them, but she did like Cobra Kai stuff.
Oh shit.
She did a lot of different things, but yeah, no, she's a phenomenal designer, and artist who, is currently working, I think it's Lucky, but it's the Willie Nelson company. So sure. Yeah, I mean, and she's great. She's young and full of energy, and hits on all cylinders. I'm so happy that she finally, has done a graphic novel, and I'm glad it's with me, and I'm glad it's Cobblestone. And she's working on the second book right now. The Cobblestone Chronicles is a trilogy.
Yes.
And then it'll branch off on that. It's a planned trilogy, but then it'll branch off, more. We don't plan to end it. It's very much in the same scope as Diary of Wimpy Kid, Dog Man, a Captain Underpants, where we're just looking to go, and it's so much fun that I don't see us stopping anytime soon.
Oh, that makes me so excited, David. I mean, you've dropped all these hints about all the stuff to come in 2022 and all this other stuff. I am counting on the fact that we will be talking at some point again in the future. I have enjoyed every moment of this, man. I do have a million nerdy questions. I wanted to keep it professional the first time, thank you so much. I could ask you what your social media handles are, but they could just type in David BA and Google will probably just autofill their algorithms and take them straight to you.
You can go to my website, davidbaron.co. Okay. And davidmer.co, you talk about my list of work, you can go to my about page, and in my about page, there's actually a drop down menu, to take a look at all those pages. But yeah, davidbaron.co is the best way, and you'll find everything, including the Kickstarter.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, thank you for not kicking me off and letting me nerd out just a little bit longer, brother. I am looking forward to our next, not just our next chat, more so because that means that there's something new coming. And that's really what I'm looking forward to from you. I mean, you have a fan on a whole nother level now because I just ingested Stained and Jesus, now I got to track down those other four issues. Brilliant, man. I love it. Awesome. Yeah, forever fan here. I'm gonna let you get back to it now, and you stay safe, brother. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
I'd like to remind you about a book that I've spoken highly of in the past on this show before, and that's Unicorn Vampire Hunter. Kayla Palmquist has been on the show a couple of times now. And my little seven-year-old girl, she is a massive fan of Unicorn Vampire Hunter. And guess what? Well, I'm sure you could guess. It's back. It's back on Kickstarter. So if you go on over to unicornvampirehunter.com, and you're going to want to back this book, people, whether you have kids or not. it's just a fun story. And, I normally would have Caleb on to talk about it, but scheduling stuff happened, and I wasn't gonna not have this book be spouted about from the rooftops. So metaphorically speaking, of course. So head on over to unicornvampirehunter.com and find out what it's all about, man. It's all in the title. It's a thing of beauty, and it's one of those books that I can't not recommend, and especially if you've got youngsters. Mine, she's addicted. So once again, head on over to unicornvampirehunter.com and get you some of this Caleb Palmquist goodness.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan Jay.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Well, there you have it. Another episode in the books. Another legendary creator, Hall of Fame, surefire, first ballot color artist / comic book creator, David Barron, in the books. Episode 360. Gotta say, this was a real treat, and I can't thank my my buddy Rylan Grant enough for helping to set this up and make this happen, because this was a treat, and I really do. I got a whole. I know there's a lot of people out there. I know if I were listening to this, I'm like, oh, you should. I would have asked him this. I would have asked him that. I would have asked him this. And believe me, I got a whole list of those questions here, baby. It's just it was a time constraint situation, but there will be more. Oh yes, there will be more David Barron on the Cheers to Comics podcast. Come on, guys, Batman Who Laughs. I didn't even get to talk about that. That's my shit. All right. Yeah, amazing. I got to remind you to head on over to 307nerdsforever.com. Use code CHEERS at checkout. Save yourself 10%. And then always shop cheerstocomics.com. Always from here on out. Hasn't always been always, you know, on account of it's brand new. But shop cheerstocomics.com. Or just cheerstocomics.com. You'll see the little store button. Cheerstocomics.com really is your ultimate directory for all things content related to this show. So yeah, head on over, do that. Make sure you head on over to Podchaser, leave all of the reviews that you can, podchaser.com, search Cheers to Comics, or just click on the # the Apocalypse list in their list menu, and you'll see the Cheers to Comics podcast along with a list of an abundant list of other amazing podcasts for you to get addicted to. So just follow # the Apocalypse. It's like the apocalypse, but with a D. Alright, and of course, leave the reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts as well. Extremely, extremely helpful to the growth of this show. Yeah. Alright, people, that gonna do it for this one. I will talk to you the next time there's things about comics to talk about. In the meantime, I command that you stay safe. And always read responsibly. Cheers, you fuckers.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
Hey, everyone. I'm Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
This is Drew Zucker. You're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
This is Mark Russell, and you're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
Podcast recommendations, you ask? Brian Wayne here, co-curator of The Apocalypse. And I know that sounds gnarly. That's because it is gnarly, man. The Apocalypse. What is The Apocalypse? The Apocalypse is a culmination of the gnarliest podcast, independent podcast, the internet has to offer. So instead of trying to go to Twitter the next time you need a new podcast to listen to and try to get Twitter famous, podcast recommendations, please. Just think The Apocalypse, man. And it's ironic because The Apocalypse is only the beginning. It's only the beginning. Just go to podchaser.com. It's in the top list. The top list in the whole world. So whether you're looking for true crime, sports, role-playing, I don't know, anything. Think of a podcast. It's on The Apocalypse. It's like The Apocalypse with a D. And do not forget to follow The Apocalypse on Twitter as well. Once again, that is The Apocalypse. If you're looking for a podcast recommendation, The Apocalypse is sure to have something for you. Good morning. Brian Wayne here to tell you about my new podcast, The Real Brains. The Real Brains podcast is a show coming out daily, dedicated to the everyday struggle of just the average human being. From troubles with rage to anecdotes about very strange human interactions, this podcast really is just a somebody that's all too familiar with the struggle. I'm here to let you know that you are not alone, so come laugh at our pain together every single weekday, every place you can catch a podcast. Check out The Real Brains with Brian Wayne. Remember, stay sane.